Hello and welcome to another edition of Critical Q&A, the show where I answer your questions based on what you've left in the comments section of this Q&A video, or send me by email at askchrisshelton@gmail.com. I really appreciate all your questions, and we've got a bunch to answer, some pretty good ones this week. Just wanted to give a quick comment, with Tom Cruise's movie out now. It's been noted there's media picking up on the fact that no one is asking him about Scientology. Or the Going Clear documentary, and of course the reason for that is because he and his press relations handler people won't allow that. If anybody even hints that that's what they're going to be asking him about, then they won't be asking him about anything because he won't be there to talk to them. I think celebrity media is fascinating that way, that they can control interviews that way, although I'm sure politicians do too. But anyway, I don't expect any forthcoming statements or news out of Tom Cruise. He's taking the higher ground, I'm too good to answer up on these accusations route. And, my prediction is that we'll see how long that lasts. But so far, it's not hurting his income through the box office. And that's a shame, but it is what it is. So anyway, let's get on with your questions and see what you got. Allison Collier. I want to thank you for your videos. I also have a question for you. I was raised Christian, however, more and more I am seeing the hypocritical nature of most dedicated Christians that go to church for Bible study and services on Sunday. I do not attend any church as I feel that a groupthink dynamic is dangerous. I don't like being told what to believe. I have a faith, but it is a personal faith. My question is, why do so many Christians judge others so readily when they claim to be saved by grace? Unfortunately, it's not just in Scientology or other destructive cults where people's intolerance based on belief rears its ugly head. It's not a pretty side of people that they do that, but they do. I think an honest answer for me is I think it's an instinctual sort of gut level thing that we as human beings have because we come from a pack or a herd sort of mentality, in terms of survival. I think that has evolved into the idea that my group is better than your group. The us versus them mentality. And unfortunately, it's most, one of the places you can find it most readily visible is in religious groups. A preacher will stand on a pulpit and will tell his congregation that those who aren't there and those who haven't accepted the same beliefs that those that that little group has accepted are damned to hell and are doomed to, suffer for eternity and that sort of thing. I think, you can kind of give these people the benefit of the doubt that they are, maybe underneath that is a sincere desire to help, not just an effort to, make people wrong or hurt people, but it kind of comes down to that a little bit when you get that sort of, you haven't accepted Christ and I'm better than you because I have. Or whatever. I mean, this manifests itself in every single group we have. It's not just Christians. I don't want anybody thinking that I'm just picking on Christians because this mindset occurs all over the place. And not just in religion, but in politics, in social groups, And this is a point I keep making in my videos because it's an important point. And it's only education and awareness, self-awareness and awareness of others, that we can overcome that sort of instinctual us versus them sort of thinking. We need to bring it up or call people on it when it's happening, and we need to let people know that it's not acceptable. It's in a civilized society to act that way. As I've I will say this over and over and over again, the only thing we should be intolerant of is being intolerant, is intolerance. And, people should be able to believe whatever they want to believe or not believe at all. OT8 Robert. Nice video with Tony. Love your Q&A videos. Some questions. Can you give us a history of where you were on staff and what were your posts? Have you apologized to anyone you wronged while on staff? How did that go? I joined staff at the Church of Scientology in Santa Barbara in 1987, and I went in for training as a course supervisor, as a person who runs classes. I didn't make it on that training when I first went on that, so I got put on as an administrator, you know, sort of a helper type administrative person called the Director of Tech Services, if that means anything, to facilitate people getting into their auditing and people doing courses. After a year of that, I went back for training, and I actually made it through the training that time, and I came back and I was a course supervisor. And I did that for a number of years until I was promoted to be the executive over the classes and the auditing at that Church of Scientology in Santa Barbara. That post was called the technical secretary, or the tech sec. And that's the person who oversees all that delivery. And I did that for a couple years until 1995, when I joined the Sea Organization. I went in the Sea Organization after I finished their boot camp, which is called the EPF, or the Estates Project Force. After I finished that, which only took me a week, I went right on to post as the, arcane vocabulary here, as the Assistant Technical Aide for the Western United States, or the A-Tech Aide. And basically all that meant is where I had the position of overseeing all the delivery in one church in Santa Barbara, I now had that role for all of the churches in the Western United States, which is everything west of all the churches west of the Mississippi, from St. Louis and Twin Cities, Minnesota, all the way over to Hawaii. So for 8 years, I held that post at management, which basically consisted of sending out a lot of telexes and sending out a lot of orders and trying to get them complied with, and you know, a lot of rigmarole, and a lot of sending people, sending staff members to, you know, training at Flag and Clearwater and things like that. Anyway, just a lot of administrative rigmarole. Anyway, I did that for 8 years until I burned out. And that's kind of its own little story as to how that burnout occurred. But I did burn out, and I blew. I took off. I just, one night, I just had enough. And at midnight, I got up and I walked out of the building. And I walked, man. I walked from L.A., Hollywood, all the way to Pasadena. And I was gone for 3 days. And then I, you know, I was married, and I, you know, knew I was going to have to go back. And I did. I went back after 3 days of kind of chilling at in a hotel room in Pasadena and kind of taking walks and stuff like that. Anyway, then I went back and I said, I'm done with management. I don't want to be the A-Tech Aide anymore. And I was then sort of in limbo for a little while. I got a committee of evidence and they, you know, kicked me off the post, which I wanted. And then I ended up as a registrar in AOLA, at the Advanced Organization of Los Angeles, where they deliver the OT levels up through OT5. That's what happens at that organization. And I was a person who was a moneymaker there. I was signing people up for services. I learned all about the OT levels, not by doing them. I didn't do the OT levels, so I didn't get any of the confidential information. I didn't hear anything about Xenu. I just knew that, you know, I knew that how many films were on them. I knew how long it took people to do them. I tried to learn as much as I could about them. And I did that for about 5 or 6 months. I was pretty successful at it. So they promoted me to be the technical secretary for the AOLA, for the advanced organization there. And so I was again overseeing delivery. And I did that for a little while, but again, I was still actually not really recovered from that burnout. And, you know, I had come back, but I hadn't really gotten fixed, and nothing had really been addressed or changed. So I burned out again and kind of crashed pretty hard. And I ended up on the RPF. And I did the RPF for 3 years, 3 months. That's how long it took me to fulfill the requirements of that program. It involved a lot of running around and a lot of work and a lot of sucking up and a lot of making amends for things that I really never needed to make amends for, and a lot of introspection and a lot of running around. And it was a pretty horrible experience. So I graduated that because I was dedicated to you know, getting myself fixed. I wanted to get myself fixed, and I thought that was the way to do it. And also I was still married at the time, and I was very much wanting to keep that going. And that's actually kind of what sort of pulled me through, pulled me along, kept me going, because I was ready to take a hike, you know, a few times while I was on the RPF, but I, you know, persevered and I made it through. Then when I graduated that, I was then put on post at Bridge Publications, which surprised the hell out of me. I went and made books. They put me on making books. And there was a whole line. There's a whole, you know, thing, a step-by-step process of making all those books. They do it all in-house. And so I was in charge of it. I was doing a particular part of that, which I won't get into all the details of. I hated it. And I did that for about 8 months. And then I had the opportunity to go out and start doing recruitment for new Sea Org members. And at the time, I didn't like being in the Sea Org so much, but I sure as hell didn't like doing that book work. And I'd always wanted to go out and do recruitment. And so they sent me out and I started doing it, and I was really good at it. And I recruited, I stayed out, you know, for the next 11 months to a year doing recruitment. I recruited 11 people into the Sea Org, and I think at this point most of them are not still there. Can't be really happy about that production record, but I was successful enough at it, and I was going around in the Western United States. I wasn't in Los Angeles when I was doing that recruitment, so I was traveling around, and I was helping out in the churches that I went to, and I was creating goodwill and, you know, being, you know, sort of a helpful kind of guy. And so then they put me onto Ideal Orgs. And I basically did that on a project by project basis as what's called a Sea Org missionaire. I was out on missions and projects. And I did that until I left the Sea Org in 2012. So that's my post history. And as far as ever having gone back and apologizing to anybody, yes, I have. And it went really well. And that's all I'm really willing to say about that. So there you go. Brian, atheist. Hi, Chris. Do you think that the new Scientology TV network to be opened by Tom Cruise will be effective in gaining sufficient members to staff the all-extravagant Ideal Orgs, or is it more likely to be just another waste of Scientology parishioners' money? I, for one, hope that it is an expensive flop, but I can't help wondering whether a vast, continuous promotion, "We have the answers for your mental health and the betterment of mankind," is all that's required to increase public acceptance and turn the tide. No, this is going to be a total flop, just like everything else David Miscavige lays his hands on. His track record alone tells me that. I'm not like big on predictions and all that sort of thing, because I could be totally wrong. But you're asking me my opinion. My opinion is that it's going to totally flop. It'd be a huge waste of parishioner money. And of course, they're, you know, right now fundraising for it. You know, these guys have billions in the bank, and they are fundraising to do this studio right now. Like, they constantly are creating this impression that they're broke, when they have all this money and all these assets, and it's just the most hypocritical, ridiculous thing. It just makes me sick. So, I don't think that they're going to be effectively able to promote over all of the toxic PR that they have right now. I mean, to this day, today I was reading a press release response from Scientology about a negative article about Tom Cruise. And they name call, and they sound like a second grader. You know, their responses are truly, in the PR world, they are horrifyingly pathetic. And of course, you know, that's a good thing for Scientology critics like me, because they're not learning from their mistakes. And that's fine with me that they don't learn from their mistakes. That's Miscavige. You know, he's just doing what he's doing. And him doing this TV studio, you know, what are they going to do? Broadcast Hubbard lectures and Miscavige speeches and Scientology commercials all day? I mean, seriously, what do they expect? I really don't know what Scientologists expect. Maybe they should sit down and actually try to do some TV programming to see, like, what a Herculean task it is. You know, how you fill up even 6 straight hours, 8 straight hours, much less 24 straight hours of Scientology-only material. It's just never going to happen. That's ludicrous. So I think this is just going to be a disaster. Samara V. Hamilton. Hi, I made a comment on your Q&A video number 5 in which I mentioned Scientology's life improvement courses. I enrolled in a personal values and integrity course, and it was going along fine. I mean, I agreed with everything up till I ended up skipping to the end of the materials one day because I'm rebellious that way, and discovered that the last question was to write up all my overts slash sins from the beginning of my life, as if that is even possible. Would you please address the real purpose of these courses? For one, intel gathering? Actually, the purpose of the courses is really just to sell you on Scientology and do something for you that will convince you that Scientology works. And that's really it. They, you know, nobody really pays much attention to the OW, sin writing, the overt writing. Overt in Scientology is a word for a bad action or something you do that you shouldn't be doing. They call that an overt or an overt act. And at the end of the Personal Values and Integrity course, the exercise that you do is you sit down and you write up all of the things that you've done that you can recall in your life that were overts. And the idea is that you do that until you feel really, really, really good. It's not the idea is not that you're going to write the Encyclopedia Britannica of all your wrongdoings. You know, most people write 10, 15 pages and they're done. And they feel really, really great because they get some stuff off their chest and they go, wow, that was a relief to finally get some of that stuff off, and I hadn't remembered some of that stuff, and it feels really good. And it's really the same phenomenon, the same mental phenomenon and psychological phenomenon as a Catholic confession. It's the same thing. So, and they hope that that will make you feel good about what you did in writing all that up so that you'll know that Scientology works, and then you'll sign up for the next service. All of those introductory services are consist of common sense principles that pretty much you can get anywhere in any self-help group or off the shelves of, you know, 20 self-help books will give you the same principles that are in those courses. And that all they want you to do is pay $50, do the class, and then sign up for another class. And if you'd finished this class, you would have seen what happens when you finish. They would have sat you down in a room and they would have gone over Scientology with you and tried to get you to buy the next most expensive class. Not another $50 class, but this time a $100 class or a $200 class, and get you going and incrementally, you know, string you along into, you know, the next higher service. That's all that's really going on there. So I wouldn't be, that's all that's going on there. Evie Hammond. I am a frequent visitor to the underground bunker. Recently, the comments section has been repeatedly trolled by users who attack people in the bunker and delete their posts to make the user look crazy when they reply. The current troll, Ghost of Gone, has not been deleting, meaning the trolls are getting bolder. I and other bunker users believe the Church of Scientology is putting the trolls up to it. Users have been decent and not stooped to their level, but it is trying. Does the Church of Scientology still have staff or Sea Org trolling websites critical of Scientology? What is the reasoning behind this? Aren't they afraid that the trolls will start poking around the internet, get the truth, and turn Tory Magoo on them? Are they so full of themselves that they can't see the danger? Well, if there is one thing we learn from Scientology, it is that they do not learn from their own mistakes. They, you know, are professionals at blaming the victim and at cognitive dissonance. So don't expect a lot of learning going on from them as far as past mistakes go. But the do they still have, you know, staff or Sea Org members who troll the internet? Absolutely. Absolutely they do. No question about it. And I think, I don't know, I think that there's probably a couple people who work at OSA who dedicatedly do that. I think they probably monitor the major critical blogs. Tony Ortega's site, The Underground Bunker, is one of those. You know, Andreas's Operation Clambake's another one. Why We Protest is another one. They probably have somebody on my blog, you know. I don't really get trolled, but I don't really get, you know, as a lot of commenters or a lot of traffic on my particular blog, so there's probably not a lot of reason to troll my blog. I have had some. I have had people troll me, but more on my YouTube channel because that's where more attention is. The other thing I can say about this is that they also hire private investigators or private people who are not Scientologists to do this too. at least that's a guess of mine based on some of the trolling that I received. You know, it's totally just guesswork on my part, but I think that might be one way that they avoid getting loyal Scientologists to look at N-Theta, you know, bad news, critical news on the internet, is that they actually just hire somebody to do it who isn't a Scientologist and doesn't have a dog in the race particularly, and so isn't going to be affected by the bad news because they're getting paid to troll. And I think that might be what people on the underground bunker are running into, if they're not running into just straight OSA, you know, INT, OSA International staff members who are doing it directly. That's what I think. Gay Podawell, I have followed you since the inception of your channel. I must say that in videos at your site and elsewhere, you look healthier and happier as time goes on. Congratulations. If an individual's folder or file holds any confidential confessions, how do these remain as such when many workers can access or handle a folder? I see the cult begging for help with the enormous outdated paper filing system. Moreover, can I assume that celebrity or important public Scientologists' folders are kept out of reach? In a Church of Scientology, any individual could have three or four different folders or types of folders being kept on them. There's the confessional folder or the auditing folder, which is one type of folder. Those are kept locked up. There's the central files folder, which is the folder that all of the letters that go back and forth for a person will go into, or phone notes when a person is called. Notes of the phone calls will go into that central files folder. When you see Scientologists asking for help with filing, that's generally the folders that they're working on, as the central files folders, not the confessional folders. Although, actually, I should say, there are usually a select group of people who do go through those confessional auditing folders, actually, so I should correct myself on that. And could be anybody. See, here's the thing. They're not really confidential, you know. I mean, within the Scientology world, as I said in my last Q&A video, there is a stamp on them, and they do expect outside individuals who come into the church, if the church were raided, to take that seriously. But within the church, not so much. Now, to be fair, the auditing folders and even the central files folders are kept in locked rooms. It's not like you can just walk into a church and walk out with somebody's auditing folder. It doesn't work that way. They are kept secure, and only certain staff have access to them. You can't, if you work in a Scientology organization, you can't just walk in and start reading somebody's confessional folder. At least you shouldn't be able to do that, because somebody who, you know, is in charge of those folders would go, "Hey, dude, you don't have access to those folders. It's not okay." But the number of people who do have legitimate access to those folders are quite a few. It's not just the auditor and the pre-clear, the person who's receiving the auditing. So anyway, it's a bit of a hazy, wishy-washy subject, as you can see from the way I'm talking about it here, because, you know, there's a lot of people who have access to those folders inside the Church of Scientology. Executives, the auditors, maybe the course supervisors, if they need to for some reason. The registrars, the people who sign people up and take their money, those guys will sometimes go in and check out what's going on. There's a whole other section of the organization called the qualifications area, which is a corrective part of the organization, and those guys have full access to the folders. So there's a lot of people who can get into those things. Now, as far as celebrities or VIPs go, I will say that yes, those folders are kept separately. No one is going to have access to Tom Cruise's folders except very, very few select people, or Kirstie Alley's, or, you know, John Travolta's. It's not the case that just anybody in the organization can walk in and look at a celebrity's folder or Bob Duggan's folder. You know, he's that billionaire who gives all the money to Scientology. Those are kept very secure, and very, very locked doors behind locked doors behind locked doors, because even in Scientology, security is kept, is taken seriously for those guys. Dubell, how do you and other ex-Scientologists generally feel about the fascination that many never-ends like myself have for the subject of Scientology? Have you personally ever been bothered by the intense public interest? It's no secret that there are a ton of people who follow breaking news in the weird world of Scientology with popcorn-munching, wide-eyed fascination. They, we, let's be honest, devour your videos and blog, as well as books, videos, and websites put out by other ex-members, The Underground Bunker, Going Clear, etc. And chances are they end up sharing this interest with their friends, some of whom inevitably become hooked themselves. That's arguably a good thing, since the more exposure there is to the abuses of this tax-exempt organization, the more likely that they might be forced to change their ways, and or the more potential new members will stay away. But while I'm sure that you appreciate people's interest for that reason at least, I also can't help but wonder if it can feel a little weird that so many strangers are so intrigued by tales of your own personal abuse and suffering. Does it ever, well, seem a little creepy sometimes? You know, it's so funny because I'm such an optimistic, see the better side of people kind of person that it didn't even occur to me that people would be rubbernecking on, you know, Scientology abuses and, you know, gloating over them as though they got some sort of sick, perverse joy out of it. And if any of you people out there are doing that, shame on you. Now, that being said, I'm happy to get the word on the abuses of Scientology and destructive cults in general, or, you know, any kind of destructive group out into people's heads and get them thinking and get them talking about it. Because I think the more awareness that can be made out there in the real world about these kind of things, the less power and the less susceptibility people have to fall into those situations in the first place, you know, because education is crucial to being able to avoid falling into the pit traps of life. And that's a very general, idea that I promote, you know, with critical thinking education and things like that, is how to stay out of trouble, how to lead a better life, you know. So I'm fine with people being interested in this who were never Scientologists in the first place. One comment that I will make about this, though, is, and again, something I'd like to constantly have you correct, is this idea that people who fall into destructive cults are stupid or moronic or lack common sense or anything like that, because that's just not true. The tools that destructive cults use to snag new members have been well crafted over decades. Scientology didn't just sprout up all of a sudden, it developed. And the way in which people are gotten into Scientology is a very crafty way. It's not, you know, they don't, you know, people have such misconceptions about this, and I've talked about it before, so I'm not going to go into a whole thing about it now, but I am just going to say that if you have the idea that, you know, you're watching a bunch of stupid morons being stupid morons and getting snagged into things that you would never get snagged into, I gotta tell you, you are woefully mistaken, because we all fall. We all have our, pitfalls, and we all fall into our own little traps, our own little way in life. Maybe it's not a religious cult you're falling into. Maybe your fanaticism or your potential fanaticism is in the area of sports or politics or social interests. You know, it could be anything. And it's a point I like to make because I don't think that it's warranted that Scientologists be laughed at or ridiculed for having become Scientologists in the first place. That's not really an appropriate attitude to have about them. Or any destructive cult for that matter. So I will add that little thing to the answer to this question. So there you go. And so we come to the end of another episode of Critical Q&A. I hope you enjoyed the answers that I gave, and I hope they were educational or helpful in some way. I want to very much encourage you to subscribe to my channel if you haven't done so, and consider throwing some support my way if you would like to, if you think what I'm doing is good, and you would like to see me take this to the next level, which I very much would like to do, then consider becoming a patron on my Patreon page, and, you know, see if we can do even more than what I'm doing right now. Otherwise, thank you very much for watching.